But yeah, I mean, I guess like talking to professional, like people that really know discs a lot and saying, hey, what am I looking for on a disc assessment to see if this person would be an optimizer and understanding those things. And again, too, just trying to screen for that in your process. I mean, we're very deliberate about really signaling in our interview questions, like, hey, we really value people that are thinking systematically and thinking about efficiencies here. We put that in our phone screens. We're asking in our phone screen process. We're asking follow-up questions in our kind of interview in-person process. And that's just a data point that goes into our hiring decision-making. It's not, sometimes we go with people that, you know, there's other skill sets that we have to preface, but we're really screening for that pretty hard here.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us on another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. My name is Chris Kiefer, and I am here with Dylan Ellert from Two Dudes Painting. Dylan, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
And give us a quick rundown of who you are and what your role is at Two Dudes Painting. And maybe tell me a little bit about Two Dudes as well.
Sure, yeah. So Two Dudes is the, I think, one of the only kind of B Corp. We're a B Corporation. We're also a painting company, so it's pretty unique in the industry and in the entire country. Came from humble roots. It started with Two Dudes about 35 years ago. We now employ about 80 people, probably be employing about 100 this year. And our kind of real kind of mission here is to try to put paint on walls, but we're also trying to improve people's lives. I mean, that's simply, I think, the way that we really, really look at it. We're an employee-first company to the best that we can be. We always fall short, but our focus is making sure that we really, truly make the lives of our employees and our community better. So, my role at Two Dudes, I'm the COO. I don't really know. People ask me, hey, what do you do? I'm like, I don't know. Kind of run the business.
A little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything. So I've been here for 4 years. I started off kind of as a project manager on the commercial end and just continued to kind of go through the progression of started doing that. Then I was kind of overseeing the finances. And then from the finances, I was overseeing the entire operation. And from that, now I'm like the entire operational side of things. And from that, I'm kind of at this point oversee the operations. I assist a lot with some of the sales stuff. So like not overseeing, but work closely with sales, marketing, and kind of a goal setting, a pace setting role in the organization.
Nice. So obviously you and I met from a panel that we're both going to be on. We just had a little rehearsal of it for the Grand Summit for Nolan Consulting's group. And I want to dive deeper. So my thought with this was I'm a pretty nerdy person. I like the technical details. So this might not be for everybody, but that's okay. I want to go into like the inner workings of, business processes and whatnot. So, first thing I want to know about is like, what has surprised you the most in just in, like as a, if you look at all the processes that are in at Two Dudes that you've helped implement or you've managed or refined, what is just like the overarching observation from all that for you?
No, that's a big question. What kind of insight? I mean, I have a lot of different thoughts on things.
There can be a couple, but my thought is like the thing that is most surprising, it could be like, you know, I, no matter how many times I think it's going to go this way and it goes another way, or it could be like, I don't know, just like words of wisdom or just like very impressive stuff. It's just the most surprising thing.
Yeah, the most surprising thing to me always about any of our systems, process, software that we have internally is how little we're usually using things. And so I've kind of had this recently, like I've kind of really gotten into our people operations space and like really have been getting my hands dirty in there for the last kind of 3 or 4 months as we're transitioning through things. And so we have an HRIS called Bamboo HR. And like we were using it kind of, and we had basically what happened, the evolution of that is that we had like a Bamboo HR zealot that worked for us in like 2017, and they implemented the whole thing. And they kind of worked up all the pre-automated responses for our employee tracking system and all these different things. They automated everything, and then everything just sat there for 5 years. there was so much stuff inside of there where I was like, we've been, I'll give you an example. So we've been talking a lot about trying to get better, like making sure we have more robust touch points from a performance management standpoint, particularly with new employees. So in painting, the painting world, I mean, it's, you got to have a lot of bodies to make a little bit of money. I like to say, I mean, the revenue per person is very low relative to other industries. So, you know, the painting business, your first job is to be great managers and great leaders, because you have to try to kind of engage, retain, and motivate people. And so we put in for new hires to try to kind of increase retention of a 15, 30, 90, 30, 60, 90 day touch system. So we were kind of touching base with people, bringing them in, so on and so forth. Come to see that like Bamboo HR has a whole kind of thing that can automate, capture all of these responses, prompt everybody in the system, kind of really structure the entire workflow of this. And we were not doing that at all. Like, we weren't doing anything with it. So it was like spreadsheets, and we were getting automations out of Bamboo saying, hey, this person's going to have their 60 days in 5 days. And then there'd be a reach out. And it was just like wild to me to look at this. I was like, oh my gosh, like this has been here under our nose the whole time. We've been having all these conversations, all these frustrations about it. And just for whatever reason, like the people that were sort of the important sort of folks in the process of all of that just weren't seeing what was there. Mm-hmm. And now we just had somebody recently, it wasn't even me, kind of find that a little bit more robustly. And we're like going to implement that. It's going to make a huge difference to our business overnight in terms of the amount of labor that we're putting in to facilitate all that. So I'm always surprised about how little I'm ever doing with things, and kind of always the capabilities that come to surprise. The other piece of that is, as you know, is that there's always like you get a piece of software and then you use it a certain way, but they're also sometimes rolling out a whole bunch of other features. And maybe you don't have a good like rep that's telling you that, or you're like just like spam boxing all of the sort of notifications of that. And one day you wake up, you're like, wait, I can do this with smart sheets now. I'm like, what?
Yeah. So, I think there, I have another example just on that. So with a couple of the clients that I've worked with, since leaving Webfoot is the, Paint Scout. They've added in new features with email follow-ups and reminders and invoicing, and they can take payments now. And it's funny because I can tell how long a business has been using Paint Scout based on which features they're using. Because like, oh, you must have been in V1 of Paint Scout, and they had no idea that there was new things that now are possible. Because and that's one system, and I love that yes, the software companies try their best to mass, you know, broadcast this thing has changed or whatever, but it's, you know, they're not going to invest. They've already got you paying. It's not a good financial decision to like 2 years after you sign up, be like, hey, we should teach you how you're not using the system well. You know, I mean, maybe it would be, because I feel like sometimes people leave softwares because they assume that it can't do something. Mm-hmm. And in reality, it's like, no, that's been there the whole time. And you just went through this whole migration process, and you could have avoided it if you would have just looked into the admin settings and turned this switch on and, you know, or whatever.
Yep. Yep. No, I love that. I think, this process with Bamboo has kind of really made me say to myself again, like, hey, before I write anything off, and making sure I'm talking, when I talk with people, because I'm usually the person that people come to and be like, hey, this thing's stupid. Like, this thing we're using stupid. I'm like, okay, maybe it is. But I guess it's making me kind of say to myself, like, make sure that we're talking through, have we really kind of looked into that fully? And have I looked into that fully? And am I looking for other things when really the answer is right here? And I think, you know, we were, and we still kind of are digging into new HRISs that have more sort of, features, all-in-one sort of features that kind of connect together. But we were definitely discounting Bamboo HR too much. And I was like, no, this thing has a lot of stuff we can use right now.
So. Yeah. The other thing that you're making me think about is how oftentimes the importance, or I guess maybe you could speak to the importance of having someone in the business that's in your sort of role to, like, if someone is doing the task, right? It's even if they're a high level thinker, there's just so much work to do. They're just in it, and they're working and working and working and working. And it really only comes from a like observation from someone questioning, why are you doing that? And how little in the business does an employee actually ask themselves that question? And oftentimes that simple question, why do you do this? First of all, it's hilarious how many times people say, I don't know. Sure. And it's like, okay, well, there's probably a good reason, but there's also probably not, I guess, depending on how long it's been since you've asked those questions. But yeah, I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like we were talking about a little bit earlier, like I woke up this year a little bit. I was doing a lot of reflection as I was kind of getting my goals together for the year, and really realized that I was kind of moving away from being systematic in the way that I was approaching some of my tasks, the way that I was thinking about things. Like I was, you know, so I work primarily in the operations space at Two Dudes. So like I oversee two directors of a residential and our commercial division. And sometimes like I'm just kind of getting in to help them triage things if we're having, you know, some kind of issue trying with staffing, so on and so forth. So like I'm always kind of, I still a lot of times I'm just focused on making the money and not like thinking about how we can do things more efficiently. And I get caught up in that so much. And I realized, that even myself, who I feel like that's been it's been a really big thing for me kind of in my career at different points of using different pieces of software, different workflows to really kind of clean up things. That's always my role in organizations, is to kind of help clean up things and make them quicker. How I'm just like doing things so manually and clunky now, because I keep falling into the trap of saying, hey, it takes me 5 minutes. Like I'll give you an example. So I have a forecaster, like a within month forecaster, to manage our budget with internally here at Two Dudes. And so kind of, like I could build something out that could kind of automate that really easily. Now there'd be a little bit of complication because there's a lot of, like I'm using a lot of brain power to see how I'm forecasting things, and I'm having a lot of insights, where if I just did a simple like percentage based or so on and so forth, like I could build out formulas, it would be a little messy. But I was like, I keep doing this. It takes me 5 minutes, but I keep doing it, and I could just have this ready so that the information was there all the time. Yeah. And it's just funny because I've even found myself falling into that trap of like, hey, I'm used to it. Hey, honestly, on some level too, it's just the comfort of it. You know, the comfort of knowing, of not breaking that boundary of habit is just like, I'm there too sometimes. And I always have to keep asking myself, like, how can I be questioning myself? And it's good, you know, like I told you, we're committed here to make sure we bring people into the organization that are thinking about efficiencies and always are really, you know, we like systematizers here. That's kind of one thing I'm really trying to look for as much as I can. I mean, there's other skills I'm always hiring for, but I want to see if I can get that kind of packaged in. And so we hired Emily here, who you met. She's always doing that too. Like, why are you doing that? We have a couple other people. Our director of residential operations here, Maury's like that too, like very systematic to the point where they'll be questioning me on like, why are we doing this way? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'm like the stodgy, like, that's just the way we do it.
Right, right. And you're like, wait a minute, this, I used to be you. You can't do this to me.
so surround yourself with those people, because you're going to get stale. Like you're going to get stale. I get stale all the time. And I guess it depends on your role, and it depends on kind of what your bandwidth is or what your purpose is. But particularly if you're like running a business, you're going to get stale because you're going to get bogged.
Do you feel like one thing I can relate to, and I had to observe, I observed this after leaving Webfoot as the marketing director, the replacement had come in, and I realized that there are, you know, especially if you were in this role of automating and creating systems and processes that were great and huge improvements from what you had prior. And now someone else comes in and starts poking holes in your system. And you're like, hey, wait a minute. That took me like 3 months. And I, you know, we've already gone through all these things. And it's like, but there might be a better way. And I realized for myself, the number of times that, like, if I would kind of get defensive because I was the person that was asking the questions, and now someone's asking me why I'm doing something a certain way, and now I'm saying like, oh no, this is the best way. This is why we do it this way for this, this, and this. And then they ask another question, and I'm like, Okay. Well, I don't want to do it anyways because I'm already burned out and I've, you know, we've already, I don't want to reinvent the wheel or so I think, but there is a need to like, I guess I would consider it like, it's like you need a vacation sort of is maybe how I would say it, of take a step back and then pretend like you didn't build the system and come back in and say, if we were making this from scratch on day one, how would we have done this differently? And that's, that was just, I don't know, kind of an observation of the, I can detach from my like love of the process that I thought was so ingenious, how I got this to trigger this thing. And then all these actions happen, but there's actually a better way now, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, for people that kind of live in this space too, in small businesses, it's like hypercritical to, again, make sure you're surrounding yourself with people that can push on that. I mean, you can try to have your own self-awareness of things. I would say the one thing, I'll take two steps here. So the first thing is on the self-awareness piece, you know, there was a writer, I forget who it was, that once said, like, I write something, like I'll write a poem and I don't read it for 4 weeks. And like with your, like anything you're trying to kind of do, I think in terms of, if you're doing it alone, at least, and you don't have other people that you're working with that are kind of checking your logic and cleaning up your logic and pressing and chat, like you're not working on a team that's doing that. And it's just you all alone. Like I always make sure that I go back. I should probably structure this more, but I'm always tinkering too. And I always try to make sure, like, I'm always saying like, this isn't, I know that something's going to pop up. You know, an example of that is we have a production tracker here through Smartsheets that I created that kind of, you know, we assign dates to jobs and it cleans up all the revenue. So we have like to the moment sort of revenue projections. What do we need sales wise? What does our backlog look like? You know, it's basically an inventory system for a contractor. And that went through like 5 or 6 iterations. And there was a couple times where I'm like, this is great. And then I came back a year later and I was like, ugh. Like I was just living with this. So I encourage that, but I, you know, to have self-awareness. So, I mean, write it down, do it, and make sure you're coming back to it with fresh eyes as much as you can. The second part though, is just, yeah, I think it's critical to surround yourself with people that are going to challenge you in this way to the extent that you can in a small business. Again, it's really hard. You know, you're not working in a software firm, you're not working in a tech company. And so the people, like the functional roles that I need to fill in my organization may not have kind of that cross skill, but to the extent that you can try to screen in for that or find that, like do, because yeah, there's, I would relate it back to, so our director of residential ops is, her name's Maury, and she is always just like pressing on me with how the scheduling function works at Two Dudes. And I'm like, yeah, it just kind of stinks because X, Y, and Z, and I don't want to put in all the time to like have to do this. And, you know, I understand it kind of stinks, but I think overall we'll live with it and it's okay. And she'll just be like, no, you're completely blind to this. And she doesn't say it that clearly, but
yeah,
to more or less be like, hey, you're too emotionally, not like emotionally stuck, but you're like stuck on this. Mm. Like you're in the old world. Like, and she is just trudging ahead. She has looked at basically every piece of software in the marketplace, like trying to find something for us. And I really love that. That's inspiring. It gets my juices flowing again too.
Yeah. So investigating softwares is a hard process. And at least in my experience, any software, regardless of the niche that you're trying to solve for, there's probably, you know, half a dozen softwares out there or even more that like have that feature that you could throw in or whatever. But I am of the belief that there is no, everybody wants, and the number of times I've heard people say like, I'm just going to build a software for painting or whatever. It's like, okay, like that's a great, I mean, I love the idea of like something that would tie it all together. But I think there's too many softwares that are so good at one particular thing and the user interface is amazing that I've shifted to the belief of there is no silver bullet. The most important thing is that the usability of that software is great for your employees and you got to have the API like flexibility with that software to integrate it with other things like Zapier or direct into the API if depending on how they play with other softwares. But I like when we're investigating a software, my first question is, what integrations does it have? If it doesn't have Zapier, that's a huge negative. It's like, what's their API like? Oh, they don't even have an open API. Nope, not even worth it. It's like, not, I don't care how cool it is. If we can't get information in and out, the benefits are already gone.
I 100% agree. I just relate this back just because it's been what I've been doing recently, but we're looking into, I actually have somebody else in the organization doing it, but we're looking into kind of more robust HRIS solutions, right? So something that ties together a learning management system with a payroll and benefits system with kind of the typical HRIS, like just kind of information management of employees with a hiring system, like all kind of in one place, right? And, you know, I haven't really worked with her, kind of like she's still kind of in the investigation stage. And so we're not in the stage where I'm doing demos with them or playing in the sandbox, but I'm kind of like, yeah, I can see that. So we were looking at Litmos a little bit from a learning management standpoint. And I was seeing kind of everything that they do, like every little minute detail they've thought of. Because that process of being like a single focus software system of like, oh no, these types of companies need to have a way to field verify. So there needs to be a way to film training. Mm. There needs to be a way to take photographs. It can't just be through, and all these kind of like micro details that they had. I was like, I cannot imagine that, you know, there's some kind of all-in-one, you know, people operations sort of platform that has a training module that's that robust. And so I'm always in the push and pull with that as well. I want the kind of all-in-one solution, but yeah, I mean, most things that just focus on one thing are just so good and they're so kind of addictive for everybody.
Yeah,
that it's hard to get away from.
Yeah, I don't know if you're a Tesla fan, but I just watched their investor presentation that they, it was a week ago or something. And one of the highlights that I think was very brief and kind of overlooked by a lot of people was they talked about how they're literally building every single software that they use in Tesla is all custom coded for them. Mm-hmm. So like, and they're, you know, $1 billion company. But that it is the dream of like, we're going to, so literally the examples that they gave were like HR, you know, fleet management, production, like like time cards, everything is like the whole company they're solving the same problem that we are trying to solve in businesses, right? And you're trying to fix it too, dudes, but they have the resources to actually make this thing from scratch and it's going to be world class, but it's only applicable to them.
Yeah.
Like you could never just plug this into another car company because it's so unique. So anyways, the alternative for the small, you know, $1 to $20 million company is to, in my opinion, have softwares that are great for that purpose and integrate. And then you got to process and systemize things.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think I'm coming back to that space. But it depends on what week you ask me. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes when I'm fixing Zapiers that break or trying to create, you know, new Zaps for, you know, new salespeople between this and that or whatever the case may be, I'm like,
Yeah. I still think it is always a noble thing, but there will be trade-offs regardless of the direction you go. And one trade-off is like, if you're going to build this all-in-one painting business operating system that anyone can use, now you're a software company, and now you need to figure out, like, do other people, they're not going to be totally happy with exactly how you built it, so you have to make it customizable and add features and whatever. So, but
do the game that everybody else plays too.
Exactly. Yeah. So next question. How, like, this is a pretty specific, and I don't know if you've gotten into this lately, because I feel like this is an important step, but at Webfoot, I don't know who named it this, but soup to nuts is what they called it. And I was like, what does that mean? I looked up the phrase, and apparently it's in really fine dining. You start your first course as a soup of some sort, and you've got like, you know, 8 or 12 courses. And the last thing is some like after dinner nuts. So it's the full gamut is what that saying means. where you literally start with, all right, how do we market to people? And how do those people come into our system, and who answers the phone? And you go through every little tiny checkbox and look at who's putting in what piece of data where. And so at Webfoot, we did, we literally, it was, I think we had to schedule like 4 hours in the day, and we did that 3 times to get through the whole process. So it was 12 hours of Zoom calls where we would call the receptionist, we scheduled time with the receptionist, and then we had like me, the finance person, the operations person, we're all watching what the person was doing. And then it was like, okay, tell me why you just did what you did right there. Like, and then everybody together is like, if we took out this field and she didn't ask that, would that break anything? And everyone's like, nope, we're good there. We can take that out. That's an old process. Or the finance person would say, hey, could you actually just ask them if the, like, if they're the billing contact or if it's someone else? And it's like such a small tweak, but now we can capture it earlier. We can put it on the proposal. We can put it in Smartsheets. And like, so it was that sort of thing, but no, nothing changed while we were watching. The soup to nuts process was just, let's just watch the whole system, ask questions, make notes. So someone had this, like, I think it was like 10 pages by the end of this outline of like possible areas of improvement. But then once we had gone through the entire system, then we had the, you know, the key stakeholders that kind of know the systems of each department. Then we got together and we prioritized, okay, what do we want to tackle this quarter? And then we revisited that 3 or 4 times over the next year. And we'd assign new to-dos and little projects and initiatives to improve. Have you guys ever done anything like that?
No, I feel pretty intimidated right now.
Yeah.
It seems pretty robust.
I wish I could say it was my idea, but it was not. I just was like, they were like, hey, Chris, come. This was like shortly after I started at the company, but I knew the marketing department well, and they knew that I liked this type of stuff. But anyways, I was just thinking, if someone is looking for a way to improve, the nice thing about it, first you have to have time, you have to carve out the time.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, what we found is that the biggest gains were not actually new systems. It was just clearing out junk that was left over, you know? Yeah. So it was really refreshing to get in and be like, hey, we can just get rid of this thing because nobody does that. And that was something that had been trickling on to every system. And it was just like junky, cluttery data that nobody needed anymore, but we were still capturing it because no one ever asked the question.
Yeah, no, we definitely did that. A little bit with our Smartsheet sort of master sheet. We just had so many columns where it was like kind of redundant. It'd be like, there was a column that would say, do you need tools? And then there'd be a column that'd be like, do you need a grinder checkbox? And it's like, no, you could just say that you need it. Like, you can just say, what tools do you need, and have a little, and so we have kind of done that, but nothing kind of as robust as what you're saying. I mean, we currently in the process of looking at the real front end of our process too. So evaluating our, you know, we're probably going to bring in an in-house call center person soon. We've been kind of farming that out, and I did a pretty deep dive kind of over the winter break and found like, okay, so we basically are just missing a ton of information. like our source attribution for anything that came into the call center was just call center.
Just like, that's great feedback, like, for the marketing team.
And I was like, oh my God. So, we're going through the process of kind of getting that figured out right now. It's kind of paused a little bit because right now we're running pretty lean relative to kind of our growth expectations. Some of that's purposeful. Some of that's just, you know, what it is right now, and trying to carve out that time is hard, but I think it's critical. I do that in kind of many ways. I mean, there was things that we did clean up in our CRM in particular, with some duplicate entry and so on and so forth and other things, but the brunt of the inefficiencies are still kind of just there because it's easier to live with them than to try to bring in, you know, in-house a call center, and I think also retrain, you know, 3 or 4 salespeople that have been doing things a certain way for 8 years, and going through that process, which will be involved.
Yeah, seriously.
So.
Do you, when you, or at any point in your time at Two Dudes, this is another thing that I, has become very, it's interesting in my current role because now I'm just like essentially asking the same discovery questions to a lot of this, like they're all painting companies and it's the same thing. It's like, okay, what do you do about this? And there are like a few like hot button issues that I know are going to be problems. And I know that most likely, I mean, maybe I haven't come across a business that has solved a few of these things, but there are oftentimes similar issues that people have. And I would say that they come back to the properties is what I would call them, or data fields that you choose to collect and at which points you choose to collect them, and the type of field that that data field is. So should it be a drop down with limited options? Should it be a text field? Should it be a number? Should there be constraints? Those thoughts of like, how many fields and data points do we need to collect? And what's the most optimized way to input the necessary data to fulfill the most needs downstream? Have you guys ever done like, or thought about that, that, like, why do we ask it this way? Why do we have this field and this field? Just the same thing, like you just said with the tools. But where does that, like, who makes the decision on, should we ask about the grinder now, or should that be in a previous step, or is it the estimator's responsibility or the crew leader, or is it on the pre-job walk? Like who and where is responsible for making that decision?
So I did get hung up on this when I was deep in my kind of sales kind of world inquiry, sales and marketing inquiry. And again, I've stopped because our sales are now up and they're exceeding goals. So I'm like, everything's fixed, but So what I was trying to do with that, I mean, to kind of, I'll try to articulate this point. I don't know if I fully can, because I'm still almost confused about what I'm trying to accomplish to the extent that I can't actually clearly articulate it. But when we're getting a lead, right, so there's a few things I'm interested in knowing. So one, was it a proactive prompt that got the lead in the door right now? So it's a proactive step. Did a salesperson stop out at a business, hand out a business card? Did somebody see, did this person come through on a PPC ad on Google? Like, how did they get to us? Was it proactive, or were they a reoccurring customer? Were they pushed in by our branding? Did they see a yard sign? So on and so forth. So I was trying to both understand what pushed them in so that I could understand the extent to which we had proactive levers as an organization during sort of like downtimes and kind of all of that stuff. But I was also just trying to understand where they were coming from too. And I tried to create this whole sort of decision tree of like, you know, so was it, and also I guess the other thing too was our sales team and or the operational experience that was created from a previous job, the thing that was propelling the customer to reach out to us again? Or was it a marketing or branding effort or a business development effort? And was it the sales team? Was it the marketing team? And so on. Like, and so I'm trying to get all of this granular stuff, and I tried to create a dropdown that could do all that, and then I almost broke my brain. But I do think it's really, really important. And the reason I kind of say all that is that, you know, right now in our CRM, I have like three boxes that are trying to tick all those things. And the reason I was trying to solve for that is that like nobody ever just ticks off all three boxes. It's just too many boxes. And so I don't know. I think it's something that's always on my mind, because at the end of the day, like, why are these boxes here? Like, in that, you know, sometimes it's there to kind of pass information along to other parties. And with that piece, you know, there's always a worry that you're not clean enough, but I get worried when it's boxes that are trying to tell me things that I need to make business decisions. And in that space of things, like, I was feeling a little powerless, because again, I come in, I'm like, all right, we had 2,000 leads last year, 600 of these have no source attribution. and I'm like trying to maybe I was in a kind of existential rage or something, because I'm like, how am I supposed to go forward now? My whole hopes and dreams are broken. But yeah, it's always important, I think, to question those things for sure.
I love that you went to sources. I think I have a couple of things to add on that. And I also like, you articulated almost the same way that I would say is passive versus active sources. So the thing that I always think about when it comes to sources is I considered it organic, which is like that passive. Then there was paid ones. Then there was events. And then there was, I put prospecting into its own field. Because that can kind of happen whenever, but it's human time to accomplish. But then sure. You have the organic, which is good to track, like, you know, how many leads called us without us just because of our brand. So that can be like a known field that you could approximately ballpark for the following year. But then to your point, exactly, and I love that you brought that up because we had many discussions at Webfoot about this, is like, why do you care about the source to begin with? I think that's an important question that sometimes people don't ask, and they'll just like track, like sometimes I'll look at companies and they have a source list that's got like 65 fields. And it's like, let's just, rather than talking about which ones are important or why we have that much detail, what are you trying to get from this in your business? And I would say most of the time it's when leads are down, and people might not even be able to articulate this, but I think you would agree. When leads are down, we need to know where we can go to spend money and hopefully have a reasonable idea of what it's going to cost us to get more leads from that particular category. And so the way to do that, or because of that, I would say if you approach the idea of sources from that lens of like, what is the business decision that we're trying to have this field help us make? Now you can go in and say, I'm going to make a bucket. So like PPC is it like a category, but we're going to include Google and Microsoft into that. We're not going to get so granular that we're now looking at 12 different search engines. It's like, was it online? Great. Let's put it online. Deciding how much granularity you're going to go in there for the sake of like, and the thing that I like is, in a online business that does all their transactions online, and there's so much data that is accurately tracked and passed back and forth with systems, you have the luxury to do that exact thing.
Correct.
But in the painting world, I think one thing that's unique and interesting is that you are relying on the detail orientedness of your people. Or the customer that's filling out your web form and telling them that I saw your billboard or whatever. And the reality is that I think the sweet spot for the number of sources and businesses is between 7 and 10 sure. for a painting company. Because if you have more than that, the list just is, just from like a practicality standpoint, there's too many things for me to quickly skim while I'm talking on the phone to a customer to pick. And I'll just like put in my web search because that's easy and I always choose that one and I you know, whatever. But I feel like painting is in a unique situation where all the data people, and I would consider you one of these, know that the potential for tracking and data is so powerful and there's so many things we could track. But you then have to say, is this a realistic thing that we can coach and train and hold accountable our employees to follow? And I think that's a piece that's missing when people are implementing these super cool systems and automations is, yes, it could be more sophisticated, but you have to remember who's running it. And even very smart, well-talented people are humans, and they are going to, you know, fall into habits, and it's not going to get executed the way that you imagine it would in your mind if all computers were doing everything and they followed every single box and tracked every single click. You just can't do that, which is frustrating, but it's a thing to keep in mind, I think.
Yeah. it's good stuff. But yeah, so I want to connect with you offline about that because I'm definitely interested in kind of where you arrived at that, because I put that down for a little bit. Wasn't too daunting, but things moved on. And again, there was just more immediate problems, but it'd be very helpful for us for sure.
Okay. Last couple questions here. What would you say if someone is dabbling or thinking about diving into like, I want to systemize or make some processes around this, where does the order of operations go as far as like, I believe that you have to have processes documented before you begin the automation conversation. But there's also, that's not necessarily a hard line, because there is some level of like, You got to know what automations are capable of automating before you make the process. But how do you go about, like, okay, we need, like, if you see a problem in the business, first of all, what does that look like? And how are you deciding, hey, there's an opportunity here that needs to be improved? And then what are your kind of, I don't even know if you have a checklist or like a mental, like, do this. But how do you approach like a problem that you see as an issue that you want to try and make more efficient?
Yeah, this is where the contradiction in my personality comes in, which is I'm a systematizer, but I'm also like, I don't know. I'm not a good documenter. There's a lot of people that are systematizers that are like very sort of document and process oriented. I kind of typically tend to move forward. Now, I would say that I have the luxury of that because the business is so small in kind of relative terms that, you know, I can just clean something up myself and just kind of huddle everybody up and be like, hey, this is what we're doing. Or I'll just like clean something up, distribute an email and kind of go from there. But my approach, and it may be the right, wrong approach, maybe the right approach, but my approach is typically if I see a problem, my kind of brain and the way that I work is that if I can get interested in solving it, I just try to follow that path very quickly. So, recently we kind of struggle. I mean, we have a bit of turnover here. Our hiring needs can really fluctuate sometimes. Sometimes we have people that are kind of on the fence that we're going to have to backfill in the painting world because, you know, every body is really important, particularly in the busy season, to make sure you're hitting your revenue goals and your production goals. And so we were really struggling. Like, our HRIS has a headcount, so on and so forth, but it wasn't cleaning to do kind of predictive work on backfills and so forth. It also wasn't doing a good job telling us the type of person. So we have people that come in that work for us that have no painting experience. We have people that may have a really high level of painting experience. We may have people that are leading projects. They all have different levels of productivity for us. And so we kind of like budget in, we're going to hire this many and this and yada, yada, yada. And so our HRIS wasn't really doing any of this. And I just kind of got really hyper-focused on this. And kind of I created a whole function where I just kind of exported something, a report from our HRIS, got it cleaned up into our smart sheets, and now have this predictive model that tells us who we need to hire, tells us actually our projected productivity for the company, depending on the composition of people. So if
how much experience and levels of painters.
Correct. Yeah. And so it's this like really powerful tool now that like our schedulers are using where we kind of knew this intuitively, but like in the winter months, we keep typically our more experienced people on board because in the Northeast, you know, our business shrinks a little bit and our actual productivity was like, should be at like 110%. Given our kind of work staff composition. And so like we were kind of seeing that in the back end data, but now that's used in the kind of front end scheduling process. And so all that is to say, like, I kind of saw all of this. And for me, the way that I work is like, I'm just following that until it's done. And so I did that, you know, I was like hyper-focused for 6 to 8 hours on a Sunday, got that done, and then kind of like tweaked it all over a week and just kind of rolled this out to everybody. So I don't know. I don't know if that's really answering your question. I'm not great at being in process with certain things.
And then you just go to solve.
I go to solve, and then I'll work on the back end. Now, again, part of that luxury too is that I am so immersed, and I tend to be a roamer in the business. Of like, hey, now I'm in the HR department for 4 months, and I like to embed myself. To make sure that I'm understanding the business fully, kind of as a leader of the business and understand what people are doing. And really my primary end is I'm just trying to really kind of get that workflow automated quickly. So I have the luxury of kind of having good intimate knowledge that some people may not if they're disconnected from things or in bigger organizations where they should be disconnected because there's too much work to do. But I tend to just kind of go to it and kind of move from there. Now, if I'm making system-wide changes, I'm a little bit sort of more deliberate of kind of call a meeting, let's huddle with key stakeholders. But besides that, I will then kind of issue the diktat in an email or a written document and just move forward from there.
Yeah. How does, like, so you seem like a needle in a haystack of a person to hire at a business. I think that's the right phrase. How did, what was it that drew you to two dudes, and like, I don't know, do you have any advice for people that are trying to find someone that has your like desire to optimize? Like, how do you get or attract someone to a business, or what, or maybe you don't know that answer, but you know what attracted you to two dudes?
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, getting attracted to two dudes, I mean, again, it was a B Corp. They were mission based, but they were also kind of a small business. They were also a contractor. And so for me, it ticked a lot of boxes. Also locally here, it's just kind of a cool company in the course of things. Like, yeah, everybody kind of knows two dudes around the way, and it's a cool place to work for, and so on and so forth. So I don't know how to, like, I mean, that really depends on anyone's kind of brand and where they sit within the community. But I think in terms of the hiring process and trying to find somebody that's optimizing or is an optimizer, I mean, I don't really know the exact way. I'm sure there is probably sciences out there, though. I mean, through disc assessments and other personality tests. Or,
do you know what your disc is?
I am a pretty high D and a pretty high C.
Oh, it seems like that would be rare. Is that a
pretty... it's like a weird... Yeah, like I'm like a 70, 75 D and like 100. I'm like a crazy 100 C kind of thing.
Ah, interesting.
So, yeah. I mean, the best like crazy... Like, I would say that probably would be a pretty... It would be kind of a... Yeah, it would be a kind of typical disc for somebody that's going to really be a like aggressive... doing kind of what I do. But yeah, I mean, I guess like talking to professional, like people that really know disc a lot and saying, hey, what am I looking for on a disc assessment to see if this person would be an optimizer, and understanding those things. And again, too, just trying to screen for that in your process. I mean, we're very deliberate about really signaling in our interview questions, like, hey, we really value people that are thinking systematically and thinking about efficiencies here. We put that in our phone screens. We're asking in our phone screen process. We're asking follow-up questions in our kind of interview in-person process. And that's just a data point that goes into our hiring decision-making. It's not, sometimes we go with people that, you know, there's other skill sets that we have to preface, but we're really screening for that pretty hard here.
That's awesome. All right. Last couple of questions that I ask everyone. These are quick. And if you need to take a second to think, feel free. Do you have book recommendations? And these don't have to pertain to what we're talking about, but just like, are there any books that you have read, and they can be audiobooks of like, I don't know, they could be your favorite all time. It could be one from high school. It could be your most recommended to a friend, but I like three, if you've got three, or only one, whatever you want.
The last three books that I read, because you asked that earlier, I was like, I actually know that because I set a goal for myself to start reading books again this year. So the last three books I read were Meditations, Marcus Aurelius.
Oh, nice.
I read The Prince by Machiavelli, and I am reading Moby Dick right now. So I'm in a hit with the classics right now. Yeah, philosophical, but also all sort of leadership related in a weird way. They all have different leadership stories, good or bad or takeaways. So that's kind of what my bent is right now. I'm not reading, you know, the leadership books per se, but I'm reading some classics that have kind of relevance when it comes to leadership.
Yeah, that's awesome. Are you familiar with Ryan, why am I spacing on his name? He did The Daily Stoic and what's his name?
Yeah, I've seen his YouTube. Ryan. Yeah.
It's killing me. I got to look it up. Daily Stoic. Ryan Holiday. Yeah. He is The Obstacle is the Way. He's a big Marcus Aurelius fan. I've never read Meditations, though. Did you like it?
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. The thing I like about Meditations is it's very repetitive in a way where it almost is like he's saying a lot of the same things in different ways, and at some point you're like, it's getting a little stale. But there's also a deliberateness to that that's kind of really refreshing, and it really just kind of keeps you really take away what's trying to be said. So I think it's really helped me in terms of just a practical living standpoint, abundantly in terms of trying to deal with stress, deal with anxiety, deal with, you know, fears I may have about things, and just trying to make sure that I'm looking at the world in a different way. You know, I really think it's really helped me a lot.
I think it's crazy. I've heard someone else tell me that, that basically when they're reading it, it's crazy how many things he'll say 2000 years ago. And it's like, is he talking like, this is like still, this is exactly how I feel right now. Like, it's just crazy that the human condition, how we've still struggled with the same stuff. It's just different environment.
Yeah. I would say the biggest takeaway I had from that is he focuses a lot on people that are looking for power, fame, or recognition, and the ultimate frailty of, like, the frailness of kind of people and our condition.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's a really kind of interesting thing, because I think there was ways in which I wasn't even realizing that's kind of what I was doing, in some sense, in some weird way, and just kind of looking to pursue things for ego, really is kind of a way to just, yeah, I want to be remembered too. We all do in some sense. Mm-hmm. And,
legacy.
Yeah. It's like, no, let's make sure you're questioning your reasons.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. Final question. What is your favorite movie of all time? Big movie guy.
Oh, wow. My favorite movie of all time. Yeah, I'm a big movie person as well. I don't know if it's my favorite movie. I don't know why this is the first one that's coming to my head, but say There Will Be Blood's like one of my favorite movies that kind of pops up. Paul Thomas Anderson's one of my favorite directors. That's my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that always sticks to me. I always come back to important themes, shot beautifully. Soundtrack's amazing. The acting's amazing. And it's classic.
Yeah, I have, you'll probably be one of the people that maybe does this or starts doing this. Maybe you already do. But I love movies. It's just like everybody in the world, you don't have enough time to watch all the movies that you want to watch, you know? And so this was back in college, and we've revised it over the years, but I've settled at a 7.3 on IMDb, the rating. Is the threshold of, like, if there is a movie above a 7.3, that I can confidently just say, I'm going to make sure I watch this and sit down. And sure. It's just kind of like a line in the sand of, there are movies under a 7.3 that are good, but they're hard. It's hard to come by. And There Will Be Blood, I don't know if you ever look at IMDb ratings, but it's an 8.2. So it's like, you know, it is a very, very unlikely scenario that someone would watch this and not like it. If they're, and this, that's, I would say that because I am a general, I like movies. I'm not like a cinematography snob.
Yeah.
So if you're like a general person that enjoys, what's the word? Cinema and just entertainment, you know, that's a good metric in my opinion.
It's good to use Rotten Tomatoes. I would also suggest to make sure you're kind of indexing with Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic as well.
Yes.
Just get a little bit of flavor, because they're actually all telling you.
Yep.
They're all going to tell you something a little bit different about kind of how each, like, critics received it, how general audiences received it, and so on and so forth. IMDb can be a good amalgamation, but for me, IMDb is great for telling me, like, that, you know, The Dark Knight was both a critical and a popular success. But yeah, there are some movies you're going to miss out, because it's going to have like a 4.3 on IMDb, but be a fantastic movie. So
if you have any sub 7.3 rate movies, send them my way, because I like finding those nuggets. All right. Well, Dylan, if someone wants to get in touch with you, what's your recommended method? Could be LinkedIn, your website, email, whatever you want.
Yeah. Find me on LinkedIn. That'd be the best way to do it. Dylan Ehlert. Just Google the name. It's unique. Probably one of the few.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Dylan. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to connecting with you at the Grand Summit.
Sounds good. Yeah. I'll see you there, Chris.
Thank you for your attention and listening to this episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. Your feedback and comments mean the world to me. If you liked what you heard, please take a second, leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. If you've got suggestions for future episodes or just want to say hi, shoot me an email at chris@chriskiefer.com. Don't forget, I make it a point to include all the links to the books, movies, and resources mentioned on this episode in the show notes. You can see those directly below in the description or on my website, chriskiefer.com. Thanks so much, guys.